Your trees got you stumped? Call in your question. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you.
I got a little trivia for you. You're going to regret giving me these cards one day. True or false? The initial Liberty Tree in Boston that became a rallying point for the growing resistance to the rule of Britain over the colonies was an elm tree. True or false? Don't answer that. Text the question to 411-923. And well, by the end of the program, I've got one coming back in from each break, and we'll do something fun with them. So, was the original Liberty Tree an elm, true or false? And, John, since our last talking trees, you hadn't been over to London, have you? By any chance over to England? There's a chainsaw massacre happening there right now. Some rogue lumberjack has cut down over 30 trees in a community during the night and in the last 10 days. They're putting together patrols to catch this. Well, I mean, what kind of, in your litigation between neighbors and tree lines and properties, what kind of penalty is there for chopping down someone else's tree?
Well, it's interesting you should ask, because depending on the jurisdiction, the municipality or the state, there are they award up to treble, what they call treble damages for trespassing and damaging trees. So they can, you know, do an appraisal on a tree that's been destroyed and actually award treble damages, three times the value of a tree. And if a tree is estimated to increase the real estate market value of a tree by, or of a home or a property by, say, $10,000, that could be a $30,000 fine. But yeah, it just depends on the who's overseeing that. Different states have different tree laws. But no, that this happens so frequently that a lot of people don't like their neighbors' trees, and there's been instances of people poisoning their neighbors' trees. All of a sudden, they die, and there's no option but to take them down. So, and then it's really hard to do a forensic investigation and determine whether if chemicals were used, and unless you catch somebody in the act. It's really hard to pin any of that on people. So it happens, yeah. It's a shame that people want to see a view of the ocean or see a view of the mountains or see a view that they had at one time before their neighbor's trees grew up and obscured that view. And then they're very tempted to go over at night. And we've even seen people girdle trees, you know, by cutting around them. I don't want to give people ideas now. All of our listeners, do not go out and practice and do any of these things, because it is a very serious matter. And unfortunately, arborists sometimes get called in as expert witnesses to determine some of these things. And really hard to do laboratory analysis even to find out the presence of Roundup or other chemicals that might be used to kill trees. And
have you ever been called in to be a witness or an expert in this case?
Not in one of these cases, but I work with a lot of consultants who have, and this topic comes up in discussion pretty frequently, and it's pretty common, especially in some of these areas where there are communities that have views of the ocean, for instance, and people on hillsides that have trees that are growing up into their view. It often happens in those instances or cases where. And then sometimes it's just people mistake. The property lines aren't really clear, and people go down and take a chainsaw and cut down a bunch of trees, thinking that they were their own, but they're near a property line, and they actually belong to the neighbors. And they survey them and find out that they just cut down 30 trees that didn't belong to them. This sounds like a real vandal, though. This person in England, whoever it is, cutting these trees down. There may be some other motive, but unless you know. Yeah, it'd be interesting to know if they're just random trees or if there's some pattern to this.
No telling, but I saw that and I thought, I wonder what John thinks about that and what a penalty if they catch this guy would be.
Well, we lived in London, England for 4 years back in the 80s, from 1985 to 88, and we were there during a hurricane that came up the English Channel and wiped out, I think it was 300,000 trees were lost in a single night of intense wind. And it was a shame because they lost a lot of heritage trees. Seven Oaks, which is in Kent County in southern England, the name of the town was called Seven Oaks because there were seven oaks that were in the 400 or 500 year age range, and they lost several of those seven oaks. It was just a tragic event. Kew Gardens in London lost some heritage trees that had been there hundreds of years, and the curators at the Arboretum there were actually in tears. It was just quite a huge event with the loss of trees, and it's a shame when those things happen because you can't replace these trees easily, and it's a very, very emotional time when people lose trees.
Now, during the break, we were talking about another tree we should have mentioned that indicates the early spring bloom. It was an evergreen pear.
Yeah, evergreen pears that, you know, really herald the advent of spring with that beautiful white bloom. They're one of the very first trees. Interestingly enough, they're a deciduous tree that's completely bare all winter. And before it even puts on leaves, it puts on this beautiful floral display of white flowers. And then as soon as those flowers drop, it puts on its leaves again. And
so it's an evergreen pear, but it's a deciduous tree.
Yes, it is.
Kind of an oxymoron.
It is.
I wasn't sure if I heard that right. And are they pretty good desert plants? I've seen a few of them around.
They're really well adapted to here, yeah. They don't actually produce an edible pear, but they're a beautiful tree for Arizona.